Hey, everybody. Tonight, Charlie Kirk Show. Ana Paulina, Turning Point alumni, you could call her. Congresswoman now. She's been sworn in. Terrific. Joins our program. And then Alex Berenson to talk about the Twitter files, Elon Musk, marijuana, and more. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. That is Charlie Kirk Show. And hit subscribe. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. If you are in high school, start a chapter. If you're in college, start a chapter. If you're a parent of a high school student, really encourage your student to start a chapter. Maybe you can help them with it. tpusa.com. That is your starting point for all things in the fight for freedom, for liberty, the fight for a beautiful tomorrow. Freedom. No, tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. You can see all of our events. You can stay engaged and involved. tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Ana Paulina Luna, who I'm very proud of how she handled last week and got a great deal for the American people. Ana, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Charlie.
So Ana, walk us through last week. It was a lot of drama. Maybe it wasn't as much drama. I mean, some people take that as an insult. I think there was some drama, but I mean that in the most positive sense, but the result was a beautiful one. Walk us through it.
Yeah. So initially, you know, I think a lot of people were saying that, and it wasn't entirely their fault, right? The mainstream friendly media that we thought had our backs was basically saying that because we were having these debates and discussions, that somehow we were, you know, preventing the entire country from moving forward. But my response to that was these discussions were long overdue. And there were certain things which I've always been transparent, especially in Washington, about, you know, what I'm fighting for, right? And really what helped shape that ideology is really my time on the campaign trail. I had interacted with many, many people over the last 4 years. And the one thing that kept resonating and what they kept saying is they wanted me to go there, but they didn't want me to just fall in line and do the same thing because they realized that the system was broken. So to, you know, the credit of the Republican Party, there were some good things that were already the foundation of what now Speaker McCarthy wanted to do for our country, but it could have been better. And I think that I will say that I appreciate everyone who worked so hard. I know Representative Byron Donalds, Representative Chip Roy, Dan Bishop, so many of them to actually hammer out the terms of these negotiations. But, you know, it was definitely something that I think invigorated the base and really showed the country that, you know, Congress is supposed to go and have these debates on the House floor. That is what we do. That is why we were elected. And so I think that it was a great thing. Obviously, you know, there was some intense moments there at the 14th vote. But, you know, I will applaud Representative Gates and also the other gentlemen who, you know, got in Gates's face. They put it behind them. They're moving forward on behalf of the Republican Party.
And so walk us through some of the big victories, 72 hours to be able to read votes. And in our audience, because our audience has been betrayed so much over the weekend.
Yeah,
just really quick. From the speaker vote to the rules package, I received thousands of emails of people saying, Charlie, it's not, they're going to do a game. It's not going to be in the rules package. But it actually is.
It actually is. So one of the biggest things and really what was a deal breaker for me was the motion to vacate the chair. Mm-hmm. So that is actually probably the single most important thing in the rules package because it's an accountability mechanism. What it does is it allows any one member of the Republican majority to come down to the floor anytime, any place, and basically make a motion to have the entire Republican conference vote on whether or not the Speaker of the House should be removed. That's incredibly important because, let's say, God forbid, Speaker McCarthy did not do what he said he was going to do. We could basically use that as an accountability tool and recall
check and balance. Exactly.
And it really does give power back to the representatives. And interestingly enough, of all people, and there's not a lot that I even agree with Paul Ryan on, but he even said that when he was speaker that he had too much power, and that because of what had happened with these negotiations and now this deal, it really decentralized power within our Congress, which is what it needs to be. 72 hours to read bills. Surprise, surprise. You know, the Democrats were pushing a lot of bills in front of Republican representatives. We didn't have time to read the bills, and then they would force us to vote. They also have something called single subject germaneness, which means that they have to push a bill and it has to be on that topic. They can't put a bunch of random stuff in a bill and basically pass massive funding, and people won't have to be in that situation of, oh, well, you know, there's some good stuff for my district in it, so I had to vote on it, but there's all this bad stuff as well. That's incredibly important. But also, too, we saw, and we've actually begun the process now, we are going to be voting on term limits, on the Texas Better Plan, on the Fair Tax Act. So there's a lot of good things in there. And then also, more importantly, the budget. You know, there's a promise, and you're seeing that now unfold with the appointment of conservatives to the Appropriations Committee and also the House Rules Committee to really have a balanced budget within 10 years, also cut some of the spending by $132 billion. And people think that that's defense spending. I want to be clear, defense spending was never brought up. It was actually specifically for some of those ridiculous programs that the Biden administration put in effect. So really to kind of stop some of this crazy spending that we're seeing out of the federal government. And then also to finally, you know, the Rules Committee, which is the committee that controls all the legislation for the entire country, was really only comprised of a few members, and those members were not conservative. And so a lot of the legislation that we saw in 2016, when President Trump had the House, the Senate, and also the executive branch, you want to know why there was no legislation for his border wall funding, and it was because of those people on that Rules Committee. So that's incredibly important. There's a lot more. It's about three pages of info, but those are the highlights. And then, of course, our establishing the church style committee, which you'll see is going to be populated here this next week. And that's going to launch a full-fledged investigation into three-letter organizations attacking the American people.
I want to play a piece of tape here. Cut 35. The Democrats agree. You got everything. That the MAGA Republicans, they won the debate. They won the negotiation. This is one of the top Democrats saying that the moderates, they lost. Play cut 35.
And it's not just bad that, you know, he negotiated this secret backroom deal in the dead of night. But what's even worse is who he negotiated it with. The people who represent the most fringe elements of the Republican conference, the people who are election deniers. They did not succeed in stealing the 2020 election, but they did effectively succeed in stealing the Speaker's office from Kevin McCarthy. He may have the office, but they have the power.
Anna, he might have the office, but you have the power. Your thoughts?
The representatives do indeed have the power. And again, I will say that I do applaud now Speaker McCarthy for embracing that. I think that he understands and realizes that a united Republican conference with differing ideas is actually more powerful and more effective, especially against this radical left. And what you're seeing now, I don't know if you saw the clip from yesterday, but he's also talking about releasing all of the files from January 6th so the American people can truly understand what happens. And, you know, I'll just put this out there and say this. Whenever Democrats think that you are a threat, they will label you as an extremist or an election denier and attempt to insult your intellectual integrity or discredit you. But if you look at that, that's really just gaslighting Americans, because what we did doesn't just affect Republicans. It affects the entire country. And I can tell you as a representative here in Pinellas County that a lot of the people that I represent are not extremist election deniers or any of the what they try to sort us into that. We're conservatives. We love our country. We believe that big government has no place in our personal lives. And also to things like maybe parents should be more empowered than the federal government. Those are all bits and pieces of the legislation that I hope to bring forward to the floor. And I look forward to working with our Republican majority.
And I mean, you're doing a fabulous job of fighting for it and really posting wins. MSNBC went after you and Turning Point USA, by the way, where we sent a legal letter to them threatening a lawsuit. And I think we're going to be tweeting that out at some point. It said a Latina version of Lauren Boebert, Ana Paulina Luna, followed the MAGA playbook to gain political fame. She has ties to Kevin McCarthy's opponent, Representative Matt Gaetz, and has worked with what I consider to be a MAGA white supremacist cult, Turning Point USA. Boy, they're going to hear from our lawyers. They've already heard from our lawyers. This is a moment in 2019 before she decided the first run for Congress. She decided to stop using her married name, blah, 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 changed to Luna. And it says, a MAGA Latina House member is not as shocking as you'd think. Anna.
These are the same people that failed to condemn the racist and derogatory comments that Nancy Pelosi and Jill Biden have made about the Hispanic demographic. And I would argue for this reporter, if you think that I'm a white supremacist, you and I clearly have differences in what that definition means, because I'm absolutely not. But it just goes to show that conservative minorities are a threat and they're going to attack us accordingly.
I mean, what they call Larry Elder when he ran for governor, the black face of white supremacy. That is the left.
Anna, it's ridiculous.
They're afraid of you. And I mean, we know the left, they're a bunch of bigots. We've known that for a while. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. Mike Lindell is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels, towels that work. I know it's mind-blowing, towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set that includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code KIRK. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and have their 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special and use promo code KIRK. That's MyPillow.com. Use promo code KIRK or call 800-875-0425. That is MyPillow.com, promo code KIRK. So, Anna, any other thoughts on this MSNBC hit job on both you and Turning Point USA?
Well, I'm just glad that you guys are pursuing it legally. You know, being that Turning Point is such a massive conservative organization, I've witnessed it firsthand, the amount of minority students that have felt that they have been kind of left alone, and Turning Point provides a space for them to get involved. So the fact that they are attacking both myself and the organization as a whole, I'm really glad that you guys are pursuing it legal. I think for far too long, these outlets have gotten away with straight up slander. And as a public figure, it is harder for me to basically protect myself. But I do think that you guys are in the right for that. And I will be with you guys every step of the way. Definitely take it to the mat with them.
Well, thank you, Anna. Let me play a piece of tape here. Representative Schiff says, look, the only thing we should be worrying about is violent right-wing militias. Play cut 55.
The committee will also seek to discredit law enforcement like the FBI, who are so important in the fight against domestic violent extremism. Republicans in Congress just don't care. The greatest threat, the greatest terrorist threat to our country comes from violent right-wing militia groups and their sympathizers, and Republicans in Congress just don't care.
Now, Anna, he's ranting, and I love when he gets really upset. The octave in his voice goes up, don't care. It's really, really threatening from Shifty Schiff. However, Kevin McCarthy has now said, we're going to release the 14,000 hours of January 6th footage. Your thoughts?
I really hope, and I'm looking forward to, I believe I'll be on House Oversight, but I look forward to working with the many private journalists in this country to really uncover what happened. You know, what's really alarming about what Schiff is saying, and really about how the FBI has been weaponized against not just the American people, but people that are in politics. Look, we all know that President Trump's house was raided by the FBI, and then all of a sudden there was photos leaking of the raid, and yet that's not happening to Joe Biden. We all know that he had classified documents in his garage. You know, the FBI focusing on parents at school board meetings instead of some of the actual terrorists on the terrorist watch list that are being now trafficked basically at our southern border. You know, these are all very alarming things. And so what you're seeing is fear mongering, but what we're seeing also is the gross overreach of the federal government. And so we have to stop it. But obviously, Adam Schiff, he's not known for his integrity or his intellect. And so I'm not surprised that he would make those statements.
That is right on par for Adam Schiff. Let me play another piece of tape here from about Trump's influence in the House Speaker fight. Let's go to Maggie Haberman. Play cut 83, please.
And we heard Speaker McCarthy right there say that Donald Trump deserves a lot of credit. Does he? I don't know about a lot, you know, considering that he had endorsed McCarthy and early in the week made a public push for him that he hadn't wanted to make. He had to do it because he gave some mealy-mouthed comment. He did make calls to people like Matt Gaetz, and he did have some influence there. That's a problem for Kevin McCarthy, is that it's not just Scott Perry and the House Freedom Caucus. It's this Matt Gaetz group, and Matt Gaetz kept his folks together.
It's all Matt Gaetz' fault. We love Matt Gaetz. Anna, walk us through it.
You know, Maggie was fortunate for us, she was not in that negotiating room. But I will say Matt was actually there every step of the way, and he was actually in a lot of those negotiation talks. I will credit President Trump. You know, President Trump is known for the art of the deal, and there's many times that I actually had either heard from him or I talked to him directly. And I think what President Trump understands and realizes is what we did in the House is really in an effort to avoid what we're currently seeing in Senate, especially under Mitch McConnell. And so I think that President Trump really was someone that we can attribute some of the success to. But I think more importantly, it's going to be attributed to those members that came together, went to the drawing board, went back and forth, and ultimately came to an agreement. And I will say this, Representative Gaetz definitely has a spine. And if it weren't for Representative Gaetz, I don't think that we would have had some of the great agreements that we came to. And so I think it was a team effort. And again, I look forward to seeing Gaetz and Speaker McCarthy working together.
Anna, we're proud of you. Keep fighting hard. It is the beginning of a big Congress. Ilhan Omar, Eric Swalwell, Adam Schiff are not on committees. We're going to get the January 6th footage. We have a church committee. We have a mandate with judiciary, a mandate with oversight. We're starting to post some wins, and you're a big part of that. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rents are soaring at unprecedented highs. If you're renting or have a friend or family member that is, now is a great time to make the move to homeownership. Look, you got to own. Renting, that's great reset stuff. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific Mortgage have helped so many people make that leap from renting to owning, with lots of programs that offer first-time buyers assistance with little to no down payment needed. I encourage you right now to visit my buddies, their website. They're great guys. They're Christians. They're conservatives. They love the Lord. AndrewandTodd.com right now. The thing I love about these guys is it's not about the transaction. They're helping you create a plan to help you reach your goals. Give them a call or go to their website, AndrewandTodd.com. With today's still historically low interest rates, it's easier than you think to become a homeowner. I've relied on them, and producer Andrew has as well. I highly recommend you take action now. And if you know someone paying rent, tell them about Andrew and Todd. Go to AndrewandTodd.com and tell them the Charlie Kirk Show sent you. Alex, welcome to the program. I'm enjoying your book, by the way. It's terrific.
Thank you.
I'm finally getting around to reading it. I have like a stack this high of things I want to read. But it's very thoughtfully composed and extraordinarily well-researched. So, Alex, let's just dive into the Twitter files. It's really hard, admittedly, to follow and track all of them. I'm not exactly a believer in this communication strategy by Taibbi and Musk, which is this long, drawn-out kind of drip strategy. Do you agree with that off the bat?
I mean, yes. And frankly, Elon is mad at me now. And the reason he's mad at me is that I said to him last week when I went in, I said, I think there's been great information in here, especially the FBI stuff, and it's gotten lost in these super long threads. What I'm going to do with what I write is I'm going to highlight and I'm going to link to my Substack. And basically, I thought he was fine with that. I did that Monday on mine, which was about Scott Gottlieb and Pfizer and how they had, Pfizer had or Gottlieb personally had pushed the censor vaccine critics, including a former guy he worked with in the Trump administration, okay? And I was very pleased with the story. And, you know, Elon he didn't even see it before it came out. And there are no questions about what I could write or not write. And then it turned out he was mad because I didn't put everything on Twitter immediately. And I just think that, unfortunately, now there's been 13 of these, or 14, I guess, today, because Matt put more stuff up today. And they're long threads. And the really good stuff has gotten a little bit lost. And it's made worse by the fact that, you know, places like the New York Times or the New Yorker or wherever, that, you know, the mainstream / elite / liberal media will not cover what's happening except in this sort of like, oh, Elon's up to something kind of way. And that makes it worse, too. So So to me, again, the fact that, you know, that a board member at Pfizer was pushing to suppress vaccine debate is a big story. The fact that, you know, the FBI was going to Twitter with individual tweets they wanted pulled,
yes,
is a big story. And unfortunately, as, you know, as big a platform as Twitter is and as big a, you know, audience as Elon has, he's not the whole media, and it's gotten a little bit lost.
It has gotten a little lost, and it was highly covered with a lot of attention, the first kind of drips, right? But the volume of information, at least my public relations feedback would be, have a filter team, find the 10 to 15 smoking guns, and then release all of it in these massive volumes of bit.lys if you really want to get to the 7,000 pages of some kind of very nuanced correspondence. But people's attention span, they're just not going to go through that. I mean, they're acting as if it's a, how do I say this? They're acting as if that everyone has the interest of a public investigator or the kind of journalist tenacity that you've been doing for quite some time. In reality, to be able to win public consensus that there is a collusion network between the government and Twitter, you got to kind of get to the facts quickly, if that makes sense.
Yes, I totally agree. And in retrospect, they made a mistake strategically by going with the Trump stuff first, because that inherently politicized it.
Yes.
It's too bad that Matt didn't go with the FBI stuff. I don't think he had that when he was writing the Trump stuff. And then Elon made another mistake when he said, prosecute Fauci. You know, my pronouns are prosecute Fauci. He really politicized it, and he made it seem as though he has something really good on Fauci. And as far as I know, you know, those searches are still being done, and we don't know what, if anything, they might turn up. And so that's a problem too. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because Elon is doing a great public service here. You never get this kind of information,
yes,
from a big public company.
Yes.
And he's taking a chance, okay? He knows it. He's taking a chance. He's opening up himself and Twitter to potential lawsuits.
Well,
he deserves credit for this.
That's my difficulty right now, I'll be honest, because they put a do not amplify tag on me. And so then I have lawyers coming up to me saying I should sue, and they're presenting why. And I'm like, well, do I want to sue? I kind of like Elon, and I like what
he's
doing. And so at the same time, do you sue the former board of directors? And you know, so I'm kind of in this.
The way it is, if you sue anybody in old Twitter, you're going to be essentially suing Elon, because he owns the company now. All those lawsuits go to him, and that is a problem. And in fact, you know, I think that's something that people on the right, who you know, who may be aggravated by some of the stuff that's turned up, have to think about, because you're going to wind up suing Elon, and that's, you know, if you're in favor of him doing this, you're then punishing him for that.
Yeah, and so that's what stopped me so far. Now, what I might do, at least in my circumstance, I might sue the Department of Homeland Security, because sure, now we have evidence that the government was the one actually lobbying to get me censored via grants distributed. But that's a separate topic for a different time. But Alex, where is the Fauci stuff? We've been teased with this for a while. I'm starting to get a little bit skeptical.
Yes. Again, so look, Fauci gave that huge deposition back in November, okay? And it came out, and, you know, I was in there, and, you know, other people were named in there, and there was a lot of bobbing and weaving by Fauci. There's a lot of I don't recalls. But I will say this. He was definitive that he had not had direct contact with Twitter on censorship. And the guy, and say what you want about Fauci, the guy is very savvy. And if he was willing to go to that, you know, sort of degree of certainty, when on all the other stuff he was bobbing and weaving and saying he didn't remember, I think you're right to wonder what's really going to turn up. The other unfortunate problem is that we know, in addition to email, in addition to the Twitter Slack channels, and in addition to something called Jira, which was sort of an internal Twitter support panel, all that stuff is searchable. Look, Twitter was going to have phone calls. They were going to, you know, maybe their lobbyists were going to meet people at the NIH in person. Maybe they were going to have signal chats. Maybe they were going to have text messages. All that stuff is gone. So it is not clear that there's going to be anything definitive about Fauci. I'm not saying that there's not. I'm just saying, at this point, you are right to be skeptical.
But then it does beg the question, why did Elon hype it to Saturn, right? I mean, he says, and my pronouns are Fauci for prison or something like that.
Oh, prosecute Fauci.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hype squad on steroids there.
Well, Elon is he's under an enormous amount of stress, running Twitter, running Tesla, running SpaceX. I will say as far as I can tell, when he talks about the woke mind virus, and he talks about his concerns about, you know, sort of the way Twitter was used and the way Twitter used itself, right? The way Twitter's executive used the platform to amplify, you know, super liberal doctrine, you know, San Francisco, Berkeley doctrine. That is completely genuine. That is, he believes that, and he believes it was a giant mistake, and he believed he had to step in and buy the company. That doesn't mean that everything he does, you know, he's doing with incredible, you know, sort of strategic forethought. And what he said about Fauci, you know, we'll find out. But I can tell you that, look, if I'd had the Fauci documents, you know, that would have been the first thing I wrote, not Gottlieb. I didn't have those. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying I did not have them.
Got our hopes up, mine included, that's for sure. So, Alex, I want to ask you, so I think you've been really kind of fair on the Twitter thing, you know, good Elon, bad Elon, banning a journalist, not that. And you've been in the middle and, you know, really kind of just calling balls and strikes as a referee. I want to ask you just kind of more subjectively than objectively, have you seen a greater ability for us to be able to challenge vaccine narratives than the prior regime?
So, but I think something bad has happened too. And a guy who I actually don't like much, Nate Silver, who's a, you know, he's a sort of election prediction guy who sometimes is right, sometimes is wrong. So, you know, typical reliably liberal guy. But he said a few days ago something like, I think people are sort of talking, they used to be shouting at each other on Twitter, and now they're talking past each other. And I think to some extent what's happened on the right is that people are just done trying to argue with the left on Twitter. They felt defensive and under the old regime, and they felt they sort of had to engage or be ignored. And now it's more like, hey, there's this right-wing echo chamber, just like the left-wing echo chamber, and nobody is talking at all.
No, and I fully admit, I'm done talking to the left. I think they're a waste of time. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I just, they repulse me. Sorry, continue.
No, just that. So, and I really believe, and one reason I sued to get back on, it's really important to engage. It's important to have debates.
I think that's right.
But when people who I would like to have conversations with, you know, call me a conspiracist or, you know, totally misrepresent what I say about, you know, anything about COVID or the vaccines, at some point I'm going to give up on trying to, you know, forget yes, convince, that, but just dialogue right. with them. That's and right. so I think that's happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll fully acknowledge I've become jaded and bitter with it because I sent out a rather innocuous tweet about people dropping suddenly, and I get called human garbage by literally, yeah. actually, not like actually called human garbage by members of Congress in this. And I, at some point, you're kind of like, yeah, actually, I hate you too. I mean, I'm not going to dialogue. Sure. You're not coming at this in good faith. You're sure. comparing me to disposable waste.
Thanks.
So, Alex, I tweeted out after the tragic collapse of Damar Hamlin, and praise God he's doing better, that this is an all too familiar sight, athletes dropping suddenly, and I was called human garbage, all that sort of stuff. But I do want to ask you, Alex, you're really into the data. You look at this objectively. Are we seeing a disturbing trend of young, healthy people drop suddenly and or have documented otherwise inexplicable cardiac events?
So I would say there's two separate issues. We are absolutely seeing a disturbing trend of excess deaths in countries that use the mRNA shots being high. Okay, that is unquestionable, and it's not COVID related, or it's only partly COVID related. By the way, the shots were supposed to stop the deaths from COVID, and they haven't done that. But if you look at Australia, if you look at Taiwan, if you look at Germany, in the U.S., it's actually a little bit less clear, in part because we had fewer people vaccinated, I think, and in part because we had, many COVID deaths in 2020 and 2021, which pulled forward some of the vulnerable people who might be dying right now. But in countries that didn't have as much COVID in 2020 and 2021. 2022, they had a lot of excess deaths. Now, what's interesting and what people don't really get is that's mostly in older people. So the trends are clearest actually in people over 65. Okay, so that's one issue. And I will say unequivocally, that is real. It is, needs to be investigated. It is not being investigated. And I don't know why it's not being investigated. And the explanations that aren't vaccine related are not very convincing for that. Okay. The second issue is sort of the Damar Hamlin issue. You know, a journalist named Grant Wall, who died last month of a, you know, of an aortic aneurysm, these cardiac deaths that we see. People are certainly perceiving that there's been more died suddenly deaths of people under 50. It's really hard to measure that objectively. What's happening, though, is that because the vaccine companies and because the government and because, you know, supposedly independent scientists are not doing the work they need to do to look at this bigger problem, people who don't necessarily know, you know, the details of the statistics of, you know, deaths in Taiwan, but sense that something, you know, is wrong and is not being investigated, yes, or jumping on these problematic deaths and cardiac events in younger people.
Yeah,
and then what? Then the response from the mRNA people, from the vaccine fanatics, is you can't talk about any of these deaths. There's always another explanation, and you're, as you found and as I've seen, you're a ghoul for talking about that. Okay, fine. I will never talk about another cardiac death if you promise me right now we're going to get a blue ribbon commission to investigate, yes, what's happening with overall excess mortality. I'll make that deal this minute.
And there's a fabulous Babylon Bee headline. Did you see this? It's one of the funniest things I've seen. And it's funny because it's true. And I want to read it. I posted it on my Instagram. Experts say they don't know what thing is causing everybody to suddenly collapse, but it's definitely not that one thing.
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's what's going, you know, it's these jokes about, you know, coincidence is now the leading cause of death. I mean, the vaccines have failed. Okay, they've failed to stop COVID. They failed to stop infection or transmission. We can argue about whether they're doing anything right now to stop COVID deaths, you know, and serious COVID cases. But they clearly haven't improved the health of the population as a whole.
That's exactly.
And we know this because deaths are higher in a lot of countries now than they were during COVID. So the mRNAs have failed, and the fact that the federal government and state governments and the WHO and these places will not be honest about this is what's driving the anger and the, and, you know, to some extent, the conspiracy theories.
Alex Berenson, thank you for pursuing truth and just going after the data. The crime that I committed and that you've committed is the crime of noticing. You're not allowed to notice it, and you certainly aren't allowed to tell people you've noticed it.
Well, look, I'm going to be going after Pfizer and the Biden White House. I hope people will come check out my Substack, which is Unreported Truths. You can see the Gottlieb story. You can see how Pfizer was actually trying to censor debate around the vaccines. And that lawsuit is coming soon. I don't know when yet, but hopefully it will be as successful as last year's suit against Twitter was.
Alex, thank you so much. Check out his book, especially the one on marijuana. It's a game changer. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.